Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Your life, your country. You're listening to the Laura Ingraham Podcast.
Well, I think the left has to be careful which hero they adopt in the moment, because they tend to be blowing up on them. We'll get into that here on the Laura Ingraham Podcast. Also, a really interesting perspective that I think is lost sometimes in all the controversies over transgender athletes and who should play what and what team and whether they should be allowed as a man or woman. How important sports are for the young developing mind, especially in this era of technology and constant communication, the importance of sports. And I know that seems like, oh, this is a generic topic. But I've been thinking a lot about this, and I'm going to share my thoughts about why I think I had this, at a young age, a drive to win, and how so much of it was motivated by great coaches. And, I mean, some probably raw talent too, but great coaches, and how getting your kids into athletics of some type could actually be the answer to a lot of other things that doctors want to medicate them for. Really interesting stuff. So I can't wait to talk to all of you about that, and we'll hear about that. We have more concerns about what's happened, of course, with the border crisis. Heather Higgins is going to stop by because she made a lot of waves recently with her piece about the coming pandemics brought on by open borders. And is this also an issue that women especially, who concern themselves so much with their children's health and health in schools and so forth, that women need to think about more? Forget, take Trump out of the equation, just practicality speaking. So we'll talk to her about that. And the fact that the media have glommed on to this E. Jean Carroll woman. I mean, I knew it was going to be bad last week when I heard she had written a book and she was going to use this tidbit, this allegation about Donald Trump from how many years ago? 30, 40, a long time ago. That this was good. Of course, the media, it's catnip for the media. Anything that will put Trump in a terrible light, we definitely have to grab that. They did the same thing with Kavanaugh. Anything that could put him in a bad light, they'd elevate it, give it full weight, until then all of a sudden the allegations are coming from people like Michael Avenatti. Then you have to just pretend you never said those things. So now this woman is doing the rounds, and she made this horrible allegation about Donald Trump in a dressing room at Bergdorf Goodman in New York City many years ago. And she's been on with Don Lemon, I think, or Anders. No. She was on last week with Lawrence O'Donnell, I think, for most of the hour, which is ludicrous. And he's desperate for ratings because he never beats us. Sorry, but he rarely, if ever, can eclipse the ratings of Fox. Okay, so he thought that would deliver him ratings. So he has her on, and last night, Anderson Cooper thought maybe he could get a little ratings magic with this woman making these decades-old allegations against President Trump. Let's listen.
You don't feel like a victim.
I was not thrown on the ground and ravished. Which, the word rape carries so many sexual connotations. This was not sexual. It hurt.
But I think most people think of rape it is a violent assault. It is not.
I think most people think of rape as being sexy. Mm.
Let's take a short break.
Think of the fantasies.
Mm. We're just going to take a quick break. If you can stick around, we'll talk more on the other side.
Now, so they cut to an ad after that comment. Now, of course, my mind goes to, imagine if I or any conservative host had a guest on making an accusation against any Democrat, let's say, just make it Cory Booker, Bernie, I mean, whatever. And that guest said that what you just heard, that some people consider rape to be sexy. And there wasn't vociferous pushback from the host. Immediate. How can you say that? Like, what are you talking about? Like, the coverage would be something akin to conservative host entertains idea that rape is sexy. Conservative host indulges guest blaming the victims or calling rape sexy. That's the way it would be couched, right? Indulges the guest. Now, he did sort of, in a very kind of meek way, say, well, yeah, they were on me for some graphic that popped up on the screen that I didn't even know who was in the graphic because guess what? Television hosts don't design their own graphics. I do a lot, but I don't do my own graphics. So they take a graphic that was compiled from an AP story about people who are silenced on Facebook. And they, oh, Laura Ingraham, she's doing this. I'm like, what? Who? I don't even know who's in the graphic. But you actually have someone on your show who says the comment about people think, well, rape is considered sexy. You'd be off the air. I mean, they'd try to get you off the air. They'd try to get you boycotted. But it's okay when you're Anderson Cooper or anyone on CNN or MSNBC because the ultimate goal is to destroy Trump. So your goal is noble. So anything you say along the way, anything that's false, anything that's wrong, anything that is offensive, anything that is defamatory, libelous, is okay. It's excused because the ultimate goal, the shared goal, is to destroy Donald Trump. Long-winded way of saying the ends justify the means. That was a shocker. And by the way, this is what this woman said on Lawrence O'Donnell's show just a few days ago, which should have indicated to everyone, warning, 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 maybe this is not a good idea to put her on TV.
Would you consider bringing a rape charge against Donald Trump for this? Why not?
I would find it disrespectful to the women who are down on the border who are being raped around the clock down there without any protection. They're young women. They've, tried to come into the country. They're, as you know, they're there by the thousand. The women have very little protection there. It would just be disrespectful.
Okay. That answer is an indication of some type of mental situation going on. I don't know what it is. I'm not a doctor. Can't diagnose it. But you invite her back. Or invite her on. That interview was such a bang-up interview. I'm going to invite her on my show. But again, it's just ludicrous. By the way, I want to thank all of our sponsors, Janusel, Delta Animal Rescue, and Sheiks. They help provide this podcast free for you every week. But we have a lot of other issues we're going to tackle today on the podcast, and can't wait to hear your views. Remember, always email me at ingram.podcast@gmail.com. We got enormous concerns about the health implications of thousands of people who have been inadequately screened entering our country, screened for communicable diseases, obviously no way to real check immunization records, and many of them ultimately ending up in public situations, public schools, public accommodations, restaurants, and so forth. So a lot of people are concerned about that. We'll talk to Heather Higgins in just a moment. It's important to point out the sheer hypocrisy and emotional manipulation attempted by Democrat leaders on the crisis at the border that they denied was actually happening. Let's listen.
So when I spoke to the president, I said, look, I'm a mom. I have five kids, nine grandchildren, and your children are scared. You're scaring the children of America, not just in those families, but their neighbors and their communities. You're scaring the children.
Scaring the children. Well, the sad thing about Nancy Pelosi is that she is so obvious in her selective moral indignation that it's easy for us to expose it. In 2015, when Judge Dolly G, who is a leftist Obama appointee to the Central District of California, federal district court judge, she ruled that the Obama Border Patrol facilities, even the temporary facilities, contained deplorable conditions that were filthy, that were not according to the previous court order, that were not, you know, could not be described as anything but substandard, and words such as inhumane, intolerable, were used to describe the Obama Border Patrol processing centers, which, of course, are not designed to hold hundreds and hundreds of people, because we never had this problem up until like the last 6 or 7 years. Nancy Pelosi didn't make a big deal of it back then because Obama was president. Jay Johnson, the DHS secretary back then, was trying to scramble because of these ridiculous court orders that you can only hold people for a certain amount of time to adjudicate their claims. Johnson wanted to lengthen the time you could hold families because he thought that would be a easier way to adjudicate claims. You could adjudicate them right there, and then if necessary, people can be deported out of the country. But the court wouldn't allow him to do that. So they were scrambled. What are we going to do? We don't have family detention centers. There's no reason, unless you have a porous border, unless people were gaming the system, that we would ever need them. Why would we need family detention centers? So Jay Johnson was trying to get the court to be more flexible so the U.S. government could process people out of the country. What did the judge say? Uh-uh, not letting you. The maximum you can hold people are 20 days. So family units and children. So now family units, this was under the Obama years, 2015 ruling. Family units, also same as kids, can only be held maximum 20 days. So just so you know what's going on, not a peep from the Democrats about this. Deplorable conditions. A federal court ruling multiple times against the Obama administration. Okay, so another point I have to make. The kids. Nancy cares about the kids. Nobody wants to see a kid whose parents made an irresponsible decision suffer. No child wants to. We want no child to suffer, no child to die, no child to be in any way struggling for basic necessities, right? Then why didn't Congress fix this? Why didn't Congress spend a weekend sitting together saying, you know, we're not going to get everything we want. Got to fix this. Got to stop this asylum bleed into the country. It's that we can't handle it. We don't have detention facilities, and we can't just release people who we don't know, whose health records we don't have, into the population. Otherwise, we have no rule of law. They decided not to do this because they, in some way, shape, or form, like the fact that we have this crisis, because then they can say, see, Donald Trump's really mean. That's what's happened. And by the way, how many of you remember this case? And there are many, many like it. February 14th of this year, a Guatemalan national living in the U.S. illegally pleads guilty to raping a Lancaster County girl. Magdio Diaz-Vasquez, 22, pled guilty to the rape of a child, deviant sexual intercourse, statutory sexual assault, unlawful conduct with a minor, corruption of minors. He's now in prison 6 to 12 years. This is a big case in Pennsylvania. Okay? He was living in the country illegally when the abuse occurred. He'd been deported back to Guatemala several years prior. Made his way back into the United States. I mean, if the Democrats even once raised the issue of an American kid, or in this case, I believe it was a little Hispanic girl whose life is probably altered in such a horrific way none of us can ever imagine. We have Hispanic kids being abused. We have American kids being abused. We have a DWI over the weekend in New Hampshire where 7 U.S. Marine vets were killed. 7 by a head-on collision by a Ukrainian national living in the United States who had already been convicted of multiple vehicular offenses and other offenses, who already should have been deported out of the country. 7 Americans are dead. The biggest, most tragic accident in New Hampshire history, motorcycle history, ever, in the history of the state of New Hampshire. I think it's one of the biggest in the country. This man should never have been in the United States. He had a, quote, green card, but had already committed so many offenses, he became, under U.S. immigration law, an immediately deportable alien, but he wasn't deported. Okay, so where's Nancy on that? We also had another case in, I mean, there's so many cases, just depressing, so I don't want to, like, keep reading them. But, you know, we've had so many of these that they almost become, we become numb to them. A twice deported illegal alien charged with child rape in Alabama in March. David Ramirez Gonzalez, 29, was found hiding in his closet following a 911 phone call reporting a 12-year-old female had been sexually assaulted. He was charged with first-degree rape. He had been previously deported from the United States in 2008 and 2009. It's unclear when he reentered the country a third time, but police reports state that he had been known to use several aliases. So guess what? Someone like this guy comes now. He's released, unless he's now put back to Mexico, which is what Trump's new policy would be. I want to remind everybody, by the way, how much, you know, for me, my dogs are such an important part of my family. So many of you feel the same way about your pets, and they deserve a life of love and just caring, fun. They give so much to us, and we need to protect them. That's why I love the Delta Animal Rescue Sanctuary. They have a no-kill, care-for-life sanctuary. It's the best of its kind in the world. It's a super sanctuary, actually, and it's home to 1,500 animals. And they've all been abandoned in the wild or left for dead or just they have nowhere to go and are injured and need help. Well, guess what? 100% of your donations go directly to the animals of the Delta Rescue Super Sanctuary. So for more information on Delta Rescue's tax-saving estate planning options, just visit deltarescue.org/Laura. That's deltarescue.org/Laura to learn more about the great benefits of your estate contribution. Donate today at deltarescue.org/Laura.
Who do you hold responsible for these children living in squalor?
It's the president. Make no mistake, we've had four different secretaries over at Department of Homeland Security. And of course, that's inexcusable, but ultimately, it's the president's responsibility. This is one of the most embarrassing chapters in our modern history, and it's happening under the watch of a president who believes that if you get tough enough, you'll solve the problem. He's wrong.
Dick Durbin, as usual, is a complete and utter fraud. And on this issue, all I need to do is, let's go back to July of 2015, Dick, because the New York Times has a really big piece that day. Judge orders release of immigrant children detained by U.S. A federal judge in California ruled that the Obama administration's detention of children and their mothers who were crossing the border illegally is a serious violation of a longstanding court settlement. That's the Flores settlement. Judge G also found that migrant children had been held in widespread deplorable conditions at Border Patrol stations after they were first caught and said the authorities had, quote, wholly failed to provide, quote, safe and sanitary conditions for children, even in temporary cells. Judge G had rejected the Obama administration's appeal to make her earlier ruling less onerous. Because her decision was based on this 18-year-old settlement and this decision known as Flores. So the detention centers in Texas that were run and set up under the Obama administration, ready? They were called by the federal district court judge, an Obama appointee, a, quote, material breach of provisions requiring that minors be placed in facilities that are not secured like prisons and that are licensed to take care of children. And remember, they were initially saying at the DHS under Obama that they were detaining the families to, quote, send a message to others in Central America to deter them from coming to the U.S. illegally. Remember, they were Donald Trump's trying to punish people by using detention as a deterrence. What do they think detention partly is? It's both punitive and it's deterrent. Across the world, in developed countries at least. But they're like, well, Donald Trump is trying to deter people. So there's just no honesty in reporting on this stuff. There's certainly no honesty coming from the Democrats. This is a problem because we don't have facilities to hold 140,000 people in 1 month. We don't even have facilities to hold 10,000 people in 1 month. So if you don't want to fix the system, you're not going to have the perfect conditions at Border Patrol stations where kids are supposed to be staying for 72 hours. You're listening to the Laura Ingraham Podcast. Delighted you're with us. Always remember to be part of the fun, and we want to hear from you always. Email me at ingram.podcast@gmail.com. Send us your name and number, and we'll get you on the air. Heather Higgins joins us now. She's the president and CEO of the Independent Women's Voice. Wrote a terrific piece last week for foxnews.com about concerns about a possible coming pandemic caused by the Swiss cheese approach to screening or any type of checks at the border with the crush of humanity we're seeing coming in. We got a great reaction to her appearance on Fox. She has a special message for women who are caring about these health-related issues in their children. She joins us now. Heather, good to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Heather, what do we need to know? Let's first talk about this just blatant hypocrisy coming from the Democrats, suddenly claiming to care about the way kids are held in processing centers for 72 or, 100 hours.
I did a video for PragerU that came out about 2 weeks ago talking about the double standard for conservative women versus liberal women, but it's all about media techniques. And it applies as much to this issue as to that. So there's a standard pattern among the left of if somebody on their side says something that's a problem, they either bury it or they front run it. But they certainly don't get upset about it or use it the same way they would if a Republican did exactly the same thing.
So when the judge in the J. Johnson case in 2015 slammed the conditions where children were being held, 2,600 people in Berks County, Pennsylvania, and these two detention facilities in Texas, they're just pretending it didn't happen. Correct?
They're completely pretending it didn't happen. But remember that the left is really good at working hand in glove with the extreme left. So you have frequently had things like sweetheart court decisions and stuff that went to, they were pretending that they were upset about it, but it was actually working in their interest. So you had Obama talking like he actually didn't want to have illegal immigrants coming in, but they again get Democrat judges to make the rulings that, oh gosh, we have to just sort of release them. And get rid of a lot of the deterrence. It's not dissimilar from the American Pediatric Association in, I believe it was 1995, issued their first rule or recommendation that there be vaccinations. In 1996, you have Congress passing a bill that mandates that there be vaccination requirements for legal immigrants, but nothing is said about illegal immigrants and why there's this hole that they shouldn't have to abide, or temporary visa holders, right? You would think that vaccinations, if they're good for legal immigrants, would be good for everybody coming into the country. But there's this glaring hole.
Well, I think, Heather, that part of the problem here is that, and this is sort of a separate conversation, but it's related. It would be nice if we had beds for 140,000 people, but we're never going to have beds for 140,000 people coming in 1 month. Okay, we're not. We just don't have the option. So rather than scrambling to fund beds and fund facilities and build family detention centers, we should be enforcing our border so people don't cross the border illegally. And when they come, they're immediately adjudicated. The adjudications happen within the first 36 hours. And if their claims are not valid, are returned, or they have to wait for their claims to be adjudicated in Mexico and they can't come back. We cannot process this on a facilities basis, on a health basis, on a screening basis for criminals, because now we have a lot of criminals coming across as well. We just don't have the bandwidth, the money. We don't have the facilities to do this. So we got to stop people before they cross in. Otherwise, this is just going to keep happening.
Yes, if you are a rational actor looking for the best public policy, but if you're a cynical Democrat political operative, you view all these people coming in as potential Democrat voters, potential buttressing to the census question if they don't have to ask about citizenship. And fantastic visuals. If you think about it, in 2018, one of the big memes of the left is how cruel the GOP is, whether it's on healthcare or immigration. And because they know that people who may not like Trump's style or manner will still vote for him because they care about the economy and various national security, other issues. But if you, for most people, if you actively think that somebody is evil or cruel, you won't like yourself for voting for them. So the left is doing everything they can to paint the Republicans as actually cruel. So having 140,000 people come across is terrible for those 140,000 people, but it's good for the politics of the Democratic Party.
Yeah. Well, it's terrible for the U.S. taxpayers, terrible
for people
who send their kids to public schools in Northern Virginia. I'm now hearing from teachers in Northern Virginia, friends of mine in you know, formerly rural Maryland, said, "You can't believe this. I mean, we're having to be mother, father, translator. It's busting us. We're busting at the seams here. In some schools there are almost no English speakers at all. None."
This is so true, and I think for a lot of the, not the political operative left, but the general, the genuine left, people who are there because they lead with compassion, and they think that this is caring more for people who are fleeing terrible conditions. This is one more reminder that there's a reason that anybody who thinks about philosophy and political philosophy understands that if you don't have rules in place that are fair and for everyone and start with that, rather than starting with compassion. Compassion makes sense in a context where you've got rules that keep it fair for everybody. But if you start with compassion, you wind up making hell on earth for everyone. And they're hurting the immigrants. They're hurting the citizens of Virginia. They're hurting the teachers. They're overwhelming the healthcare facilities and everyone else who needs to take care of it. And our concern is, ultimately, this is just a matter of time and a game of numbers, with the World Health Organization proclaiming that there is now a pandemic being the new normal, is their view. And a lot of that is because of porous borders. And you see these outbreaks happening around the world. And people are coming here, as you've documented on your show, showing up with wads of cash. Somebody is facilitating and paying for people to travel here faster, very often faster than a disease will incubate. So even if we're looking for people who are presenting diseases, they won't necessarily yet be presenting a disease if they have it. They won't even know that they're sick, and they can get other people sick.
But I guess we're led to believe that this is just the price we have to pay. I mean, this is the price Americans have to pay. Like, you just don't have any say in this. I mean, no one wants this. As far as I know, I mean, some activists might think open borders, but the regular people, they don't want this. They like legal immigration, and they're fine with legal immigration, but they don't want this. But people feel like their views don't even matter. They have this guy Donald Trump in, and he's, you know, the crisis seems to be worse than ever. The Democrats don't want to do anything, and we're just supposed to turn around and say, okay, well, I guess the rule of law only applies to certain people.
Sadly, that is true, and a lot of people felt that way. And if anything, Trump needs more support in Congress, because we are set up as a divided, potentially, government, and you need to be able to get the legislature to cooperate with the executive to get a lot of this stuff done. The good news is, fortunately, he can do some things through executive order, but as we've seen, that's limited. So, people calling their congressman, calling their senator, talking to their friends, mobilizing people, explaining what the risks are, that's all really important.
We're talking to Heather Higgins of the Independent Women's Voice. And Bernie Sanders was at this Telemundo event last weekend, Heather, and made this comment about what we could do with, well, other giveaways.
We will organize the American people around the concept that all people in this country have the right to health care. And at the end of the day, we are going to win that struggle.
Senator, would you include the 11 million undocumented immigrants?
Absolutely.
In that?
Absolutely. When I talk about health care being a human right, last time I heard that undocumented people are human beings as well.
So illegal immigrants also get Medicare for all.
It's a little bit fascinating that the Democrats are effectively advocating for open borders. Anybody who comes, we should not be stopping them. We should be welcoming them. And we are saying that we should provide health care, and we pay for it, for anybody who comes here. That only makes sense if you have absolutely no sense of the scale of the population of the world or how relatively more advanced in terms of economics and healthcare and everything else we are. We are going to be overwhelmed and inundated by this approach to turning something into a right that this is something that we've lost in our language. When Jefferson appealed to rights, you know this. I'm assuming a lot of your listeners know this, but it's good reminders for millennials who I guarantee you have not been taught this. Jefferson was able to appeal to rights because they were the lowest common denominator. They were the universal appeal. They were the things that applied to everybody at all times. They came from outside of ourselves. You couldn't manufacture them, and that meant you also couldn't take them away, and they didn't require anything of anyone else. They were the things that let you have your own life, your own liberty, the fruits of your own labors, your ability to speak. It didn't incur any obligations on anyone else. The left has taken this word, as they do so many others, which has broad appeal, and then they've applied a different definition to it. I would agree with them. I want everybody to have health care, but I don't pretend that it's a right as though nobody has to pay for it. It just magically comes from somewhere. It actually comes from doctors and nurses and people who make drugs and communities putting their resources together to pay for it. And so that's why we need a vibrant, robust, healthy system of care where we can afford to take care of everybody, not one where it's just a giveaway and you wind up with a lousy standard of care as you're starting to see elsewhere in the world. It's a great idea while people are healthy. It's really a dreadful idea if you're actually sick.
Heather, people are messaging me and emailing me knowing we were talking and saying, where does this end? Where does this? I mean, it can get depressing for people. And people like to do feel good podcasts and where it's just, you know, all love and spirit and kumbaya, and that's fun. But people want to know how we can get through this period of time where people don't agree on everything. We've always been a divided country, really. But on sort of foundational ideas of America's boundaries and borders and just basic court orders being ignored, that's something different, I think. It's something very different.
It is, but it's not actually that different from life. Sometimes I get the feeling that there's this sort of libertine view, that it's almost like telling a child that they are able to do whatever they want. But the reality is that we give children the ability to have more and more agency when they exercise more and more responsibility. If you don't have rules and borders, then it's not possible to actually be free and to exercise your freedoms. And so this is about trying to find that balance. And the petition that we've put up, which is on the importance as a public health matter of closing the loophole that's in the CDC that says that legal immigrants are treated differently than people who come in as visitors, temporary visa holders, or who come in as illegal immigrants, whether they're seeking asylum or not, which is really, actually, if you think about it, counterproductive in cynicism and a little bit cynical. when you think about all the times that they're spending advocating for the rest of us to get vaccines, but then they're letting in all these people and without vaccines.
Not vaccinated,
Right. And to and because it's important to have a secure border so that whoever does come in, we can make sure that they're healthy and we don't put our populations at risk. And our populations who are at risk, infants who are 12 months and younger cannot get a vaccine. So they are the most at risk for a lot of these things, like measles. Most people don't realize this. Measles lingers for at least a couple of hours and sometimes even longer than that. So the person who sneezed or whatever may not even realize that they're sick, is long gone, and somebody comes through the same, you know, store in the shopping mall and the baby's exposed to the virus. And measles can cause brain damage. It can cause death. There were 110,000 deaths worldwide just in 2017, and most of those were kids who were five and under. The unvaccinated are at risk. The anti-vaxxers are actually at risk.
But we're making logical arguments, Heather. Your point was well taken earlier. They're telling a story. We like to make these logical arguments based on natural rights and the founders and the Federalist Papers. But they're meanwhile using social media and the emotive power of images to drive narratives, even false. And from Orwell on down, I mean, we know how easy it is to manipulate people's points of view and understanding of the world just through one photo. That's why photojournalists in Vietnam, like that one photo of the little girl screen. I mean, people remember the one photo. And yet conservatives are always doing charts and graphs, and that doesn't work. Numbers don't work. Stories and storytelling works.
Yes, I couldn't agree with you more. And sadly, I hope, though, that reason can prevail and we don't have to get to horror stories of measles epidemics or Ebola, because I was hearing yesterday that there's some indication that people are arriving from Congo a lot faster than they were before. The Ebola vaccine takes up to 21 days to gestate before you even know that it's there. So you could have people arriving here before they even know that they have Ebola. And there is no cure for Ebola. There is fortunately now a vaccine, but we no longer require it. But if you get it, the vaccine is only 70%. Sometimes 100%, but they say 70 to 100%.
When I brought this up, Heather, they were saying, oh, no, don't worry about Ebola because it's an incubation period of 21 days. 21 days, you then begin to show signs, I guess. And these people have been on a longer journey than that. I'm like, how do we know how long they've been on a journey? It's the most ridiculous reassurance I've ever heard.
You know, they're not paddling across the Atlantic. They're flying. Right. So the question is, how fast can you get from Rio to the southern border? And there's some indication now that it's, for many, it's a lot faster.
Quicker than we thought.
Yeah. So this is a big concern. And it's not unreasonable. And I would really rather not wait until there are actual epidemics here for us to have to do something. As much of a wonderful narrative as that might be, I think being prophylactic and preventing harm has a lot to be said for it.
And women are usually the ones leading the way on the caution front, and especially on issues like this.
Well, if they know about it, but I don't think most women actually know how serious even measles is or mumps. I mean, kids are now, there was a story this past week that there are kids in Florida at a college who are vaccinated against mumps, but there is now a new strain of mumps that's come in, and they're all getting mumps. You know, these diseases don't just magically appear. They come from somewhere. And we kind of seem to be overlooking that little
And all the Hasidic Jews. We're out of time, but the Hasidic Jews, they get blamed for everything. Like, it's the Hasidic Jews. I'm like, okay, well, are they really? They're responsible for every single new disease? I mean, absurd. Heather Higgins, we've posted your online petition, which I think is great, on our Facebook page, and people need to go and sign up and find out more about the Independent Women's Voice. Heather Higgins does such a great job, and she has for years, the president and CEO there, and a terrific writer and friend and all those great things.
Thank you.
And an incredible family.
Well, we have a great team.
Oh, my gosh. Well, give my love to all those kids, and we will talk real soon. Heather Higgins here on the Laura Ingraham Podcast. And by the way, guys, you have a lot of concerns about your skin. I know it. The summertime, you got the heat, you got the humidity, you got the sun, you got the wind. And sometimes you're just busy. You're running around. You're having fun and you're working hard, too. You're just not doing everything you need to do to protect your skin and give it the nutrients it needs. This is where my friends at Chamonix come in, because they have great products, and they're products that I've used now for – it's scary to say this. I think I've actually been using the Chamonix products for maybe 5 years, and everywhere I go, and no exaggeration, because Raymond jokes with me when he sees my little makeup kit, I have my under eye bags and puffiness, the clear gel, which is phenomenal. I have the jawline cream. I have the MDL technology as part of all of this. It's fantastic. You're going to love these products, and especially the jawline cream. A lot of people think their jawline, their, you know, the chin, the neck skin, kind of it suffers a lot through the aging process and just oxidation and all that. And Chamonix's MDL technology is phenomenal for treating that specialized skin. And by the way, you get 100% money back guarantee if you don't think it works for you. And I know you're going to love it. But if you're worried about it, you get the money back guarantee anyway. No questions asked. So you text now and you get the under eye for bags and puffiness, that clear gel, which is just so light and clean feeling. You get that free for getting the jawline treatment. So you're just going to love it. So you'll start seeing results really quickly, like our friend from Lubbock, Texas, Robin's email. We love hers. Keep them coming, guys. All you need to do is text EYES1 to 77453. That's EYES1 to 77453. Or go to GenuCell.com, and you'll receive two free gifts and free shipping now, which is also a bonus. Again, text EYES1 to 77453 or go to GenuCell.com. That's GenuCell.com.
All parents know as kids get serious about their sport, hours of practice increase significantly.
They don't get a break from football. It starts right after, as soon as summer starts, they start practice, and they do a lot of weightlifting, and then they start their two-a-days.
The trend isn't that it's too much sports, it's that it's too much of the same sport.
Medical Director of Sports Medicine for Dayton Children's Hospital, Dr. Laura Scott, says growing evidence shows that playing the same sport year-round can take your child out of the game altogether.
They might play multiple soccer teams year-round or multiple baseball teams year-round, and this creates a different sort of injury than the kids that move from season to season.
Wow. I've talked about this issue over the years, and I think even wrote about it in one of my books, of the I Zing, which is this parental obsession with sports specialization as the golden ticket into colleges. You know, a lot of this is the parents. The parents are kind of living their own vicarious fantasy, or they think everybody else is doing it, so I've got to do it. And I never got into this. I mean, I dabbled a little bit in with my kids and some of these, you know, sports and a little thing here or there, but I found the kids weren't happy. Well, my daughter plays lacrosse, and she's a pretty good lacrosse player. But I don't even think she wants to play it year-round. She likes doing volleyball in the winter. She likes playing basketball. And I said, Maria, that's what I did. I played field hockey, basketball, and softball. Yes, I was class athlete of 430 kids in my class. Okay, so, yeah, I was a serious – I only say that because I was a serious athlete. But I played three sports, and we didn't have any money. My mother didn't sign up any special lessons, but I loved it. And it really helped me in my life, helped me in everything I've done to this day.
Kevin Allen's daughter, Natalie, has been playing tennis since she was six.
The older she gets, the more you like to stay specialized and try to see how far you can go. So that's our philosophy, is getting better in a sport as opposed to the jack of all trades.
But experts caution doing the same motions over and over can cause wear and tear on the tissues and joints. Across the nation, orthopedic surgeons are seeing more career-ending injuries.
Doing pretty major surgeries in younger and younger athletes. Such as ulnar collateral ligament tears or Tommy John surgeries and ACL tears.
Joining us now to talk about this and so much more, Anne-Marie Anderson and Holly McPeak. Both are the co-hosts of Sports Like a Boss podcast on Podcast One. Both, of course, phenomenal athletes in their own right. Over the course of her career, Anne Marie covered 6 Olympic Games, NBA playoffs, Super Bowl, golf majors, done so many incredible shots and features for ESPN, NBA Today, and SportsCenter. Holly is a 3-time beach volleyball Olympian for the United States. How cool is that? Of course, 2004 Games in Athens, they got the bronze medal there. And she was the first woman worldwide to surpass $1 million in career earnings in 2002, and she retired in 2009. This is amazing. Both of them incredible, incredibly inspiring people, and I cannot wait to talk about something that's not political. Anne-Marie and Holly, how you doing, girl?
Thanks for having us. We're great. You're right up our alley, boy. It's a vortex.
Now, it's a little hard to have two guests on a podcast, as I don't have to tell you guys this. So I'm going to address each of you separately so we can hear what both of you are saying, because you both have such great I love your podcast, number one, and I just love your voice on this. Holly, let's start with you, because to get to the level where you were as a volleyball player, like moms would say or dads who are very competitive would say, well, you have to be that focused. You have to do it year-round. You have to. Well, how would you answer that with this concern about the specialization obsession?
Well, actually, I didn't specialize at an early age. I played soccer, I played beach volleyball, and I played indoor volleyball. And you think volleyball, same sports, but beach and indoor are very different. Moving in the sand, giving your body a break. So I played 3 sports all the way through to my junior year in high school. And I think it really gave my body a break. I looked forward to another season. And now we're hearing from college coaches when we talk to them that they really treasure multi-sport athletes. Athletes who are specializing too early are coming into college with injuries. They're injured before they even step on the court. And it's really scary. They never get a break. We used to have the whole summer off, and I couldn't wait for summer to do anything different than what I do all year long, which are those sports. As much as I love them, it's nice for your body and your brain to have a break.
Yeah, and I got to say, Anne-Marie, when I talk to my kids a lot about this, I have a 14-year-old daughter who's going into 8th grade, and then I have an 11-year-old boy and a 9-year-old boy, and they're all, you know, like all kids, they're all different. And I talk to them a lot about this, but when that first, you know, crisp feeling of fall comes, I still remember the feeling of hitting the field hockey ball. I still remember that feeling of the smell of the bag, the feeling in spring of the first crack of the bat in softball. I mean, every sport brought me something different. Basketball was my least favorite, but that was fun too, because it was freezing in Connecticut and it was fun to play basketball. But just that differentiation, as cliche as that sounds, brings you a whole different set of experiences, and I think activates your brain and your body in such positive and powerful ways versus the constant repetitive stress of the same thing over and over and over. Or am I just exaggerating it, and I'm trying to make this be like, oh, the good old days were better than today's days, like all old fogies do?
No, I get it. I mean, I have the same setup that you do, a 14-year-old, an 11-year-old, and a 7-year-old. Part of the problem, though, Laura, isn't just the parents with wanting this. It's the coaches demanding year-round now, or trying to. But I'm with you. If you miss it, then you tend to love it. And so if you take a few months off, go do something else, use some different muscles, then you can say, you said basketball wasn't your favorite. You wouldn't have known that if you hadn't played the other sports. And I think it's important to dip your toe in each sport. Some of it is the parents, yes, but some of it is the coaches saying, we want, they get money from when you're at the tournament. They get money from the extra coaching. And so as parents, I think we need to pull back on that and say, no, you may not have my child all year round. I think it falls on the parents to say, you may not. And as you point out, sometimes the parents are taken because this is the ticket. This is the ticket to college, and it isn't.
Holly, this is actually, you know, it's kind of obvious, I guess, but we forget that this has become a huge business. So the lacrosse camps just focusing on the explosion of youth lacrosse, that is big, big money. And I think to Anne Marie's point, there are a lot of coaches and, you know, entrepreneurs who are giving parents a false sense of what his or her child's talents are. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you're going to devote this much time, like year round, and spend thousands of dollars, sometimes you don't have it, but you're spending it because you think you have to. But your kid, you know, some kids are going to be great athletes because they have the genetic material and they have the drive and they have that thing. But some kids just aren't. The period. Yeah. But they're sold a bill of goods because it's huge, huge money.
Well, it's interesting because I own a beach volleyball club, and people come to us with the hope of us preparing them or training them to get to the level where they're able to compete in college. And we don't guarantee it. We say, hey, we're the best coaches. We can prepare you in the best way, but there's no guarantees. We can expose you to all these different coaches. It's the dream of the athletes and the coaches, and the parents wanting this for, you know, it's hard to get into college. So anything extra on your resume that can help get you in that door, even if you're a walk-on athlete. I mean, we saw the big college admission scandal. I mean, they were using sports in the wrong way because they didn't even compete in that sport. But there's athletes who can walk on and compete and really contribute to college teams. So if you're playing and you're training and preparing at a high level, you can have opportunities, but not everybody can. And, you know, it's tough. We don't guarantee it. We say we're going to do the best we can to get you there, but we do not, promise anything.
Yeah, it's funny when I was listening to some parents, this was must have been 4 or 5 years ago now, at one of these little lacrosse clubs in D.C., Washington, D.C. And my kids I just wanted my kids to have somewhere to go in the cold weather months, like to throw a ball around and goof around, because I have two boys and one of them is a real ruffian and he's really funny. So I wanted him to do something. But I literally heard mothers who were mothers of 6 and 7 year olds talking about Duke's lacrosse program and how she heard that if you do this and this and this. And I just stopped them. I couldn't resist. I stopped and I said, how old are your kids? She said, oh, you know, Trevor is 8 and I have another son who's 9. And, you know, we train at the University of Maryland. I'm like, what? I'm sorry. But I'm like, okay, I played in college 2 sports. I wasn't an Olympian, but I was pretty good. I was like, this is just madness. This is complete and utter madness. And the kids all look exhausted, by the way. They just look exhausted all the time.
It's funny that you say that because we talked to Tony Azevedo this week. He's a 5-time Olympic water polo player.
Oh, phenomenal.
And
he
talks about the parents really putting a focus on, hey, we got to win the U10, the under 10 age group for water polo. It's like, you don't have to win that. And we have the same problems with beach volleyball, indoor volleyball. They feel like they want that trophy. They need that title, the U10 or U12 champ, when they're not even focusing on getting better with their skills. They just want to compete every weekend. And we, Tony as a coach and myself, have that battle all the time. I said, you guys don't need to play every weekend. You don't need to do that. You need to get better because it's going to catch up to you and then you're going to regret it.
And you know what, Anne-Marie, when I was getting ready for the show today, I thought to myself, if I had every dollar back that I had spent on all the things I had spent, like hockey, like I have 2 Russian sons, right? So I thought, well, hockey, they it's not genetic. They just wake up and they just want to skate, right? I took them over to the Caps hockey rink because they have this Caps practice rink in Northern Virginia. The kids were like, can we go out, you know, use our little remote control boat in the pool? Because we like doing that. Like, we don't want to do this. This is so fun. I'm thinking that the equipment, it is just, but it kind of, you feel, I look back on some of those decisions I made. It's not the end of the world. It's not a big deal. But like, there are a lot of people who can't afford it and who feel like if you're not doing it, you're a bad parent.
Yeah. It isn't helping the kids because, as you said, as soon as the game's over, they want to go get ice cream. I mean, it's putting the money into it, is not necessary. And putting your hopes on your child playing well. I mean, one of the things we see a lot and we talk about a lot is how the parents are so invested in every stroke of the child's athleticism. And if the child makes a mistake, you can see the parent defeated in the stands. And if the child does a great thing, you can see the parent's chest puffed out. The kid doesn't care. The kid just wants to play and then go get ice cream. And so the money that the parents are putting in is for what? You're not getting that money back. And I'm right with you. I'm just as guilty as everybody else. All my kids play a ton of sports. I have to talk myself off a ledge half the time about, no, he does not have to be in this tournament. And when I don't register my kids for that tournament, I get a note from the coach half the time saying, hey, how come your kid isn't going to this tournament? And I say, well, we're going to the beach. We're taking
a day
off.
Say? You know what I say? This is like what? Sundays. I say, sorry, we're not. We're actually going to be in Mass on Sunday morning because, like, when I grew up, like, I was not super religious or anything, and I'm not like a holy roller or anything. But we go to Mass on Sunday. Like, we can't miss Mass. That's just our thing. Like, we go to Mass. Like, we can't. We're not going to like travel to Roanoke, Virginia, to play 11-year-old soccer. I'm just not going to do that.
Yeah,
it takes away from family time. It takes away from. Well, I think the stress is not lessened by this travel. I want to just bring this up to our listeners as well and get you both to comment on this. There's a piece that came out in Forbes, you might have seen it, in April, about the money that parents spend to try to get their kids a scholarship into a university. And it's interesting that 40% of the 1,000 families surveyed figured that their child could get a scholarship on athletics. 34% said their child could go pro or even make it to the Olympics. The actual rate of high school athletes who receive a college scholarship of any kind, even a partial one, 2%. And of course, Holly can speak to how many people make the Olympics, like 0.00005%. But that's just a perception deal. Holly, you can chime in on that.
Yeah, well, it's crazy. I mean, I remember youth sports and my two older stepsons when they were playing, and their kids on their team at, 12 thinking, oh, yeah, I can go pro. And I'm like, and they're not even playing at the youth level. I mean, they've got this pipe dream. And, obviously NBA or whatever, the Olympics, it's aspirational. So these kids grow up with role models. And they want that. But, I mean, getting there is a whole different thing. You know, we're looking at, like, the negative, the too much. But there's so many great lessons that come out of sports, too. You just don't want to overdo it. I mean, teamwork, competitive, learning how to deal with a problem, figuring out a solution, interacting with, your teammates and finding a way to win together. I mean, there's so many great things, but it's just been pushed too far.
Yeah, and Anne-Marie, I say this a lot to my kids, how I, when I'm thinking about the best memories of growing up, they're simple memories, but that team spirit and the perfect pass and the time that we lost the state tournament in field hockey by one goal, like just these memories, they're such powerful memories. And I think Holly, you said it right. I think it was Holly said it. It's just it takes away from that when you're putting so much pressure on yourself or your kids to be the best and to go to every game, tournament, match, and every professional trainer. Because my gosh, what would we do without sports? I don't know what I would do to this day without sports.
No, and what we learn from it, how many times, Laura, have you not gotten the job that you want?
Well,
sometimes you lost the tournament when you were a kid. That's how you learn resilience. And that's what sports should be about. And when the parents are all clogged up in there and saying, yeah, my kid's going to get a scholarship. And believe me, I'm talking parents off the ledge every tournament I go to. And I do it with the numbers. Hey, there's only 4.5 scholarships for boys in this. It's chopped up between 12 kids, your kid, my kid, and that kid. None of us are getting scholarships. But what they are getting here is learning resilience. And I think that's lost. That's the biggest thing that we use in our lives as broadcasters and businesswomen now is when I lost, I came back, I worked on the things that I needed to, and I did better. Now I do the same thing in broadcasting. What do I need to work on so I can go get the job? That's what it's supposed to be for.
Anne-Marie, do you have any words of advice? And then I'm going to ask Holly before we close. Any words of advice for the young women listening and the folks listening to this about wanting to, you know, get into the business of broadcasting and in sports? I mean, people ask me about the political stuff all the time, and I don't know if I even have any great advice, but the sports world is super, super competitive on the broadcasting level. What did you need to bring to the table to stand out from all the other women out there who've wanted to break into the field?
So I'm in my 30th year in, I hate saying that number too, but 30th year in sports television. I know it's brutal. I need to stop
saying
that.
You're so good, though. You're so talented. Oh, my God. You're great. You do such a great job.
Thank you. I appreciate that. What you need to bring is a love for the dirty work, a love for listening for the right sound bite. A love to learn. I feel like, and now I'm really going to sound old, that with social media and the likes and the emphasis on what you look like, a lot of women getting into broadcasting and sports broadcasting now are focused on that. I didn't have any of that. It had to be my brain. It had to be my brain coming in. And so look at the people that you admire and ask them to mentor you. We all got helped by somebody along the way. You need to ask. But Laura, I'm sure you have the same experience. People ask for help. I offer to help and they don't follow up.
Follow up.
I am not going to chase you to help. Follow up.
Oh, that is so funny. That's or they'll send you a text. My son wants to get into the, do you have any ideas? I mean, you can't just be so glib about it. You have to be very deliberative about trying to, you know, get help and network with people. And I think, Anne-Marie, I say, you know, I have to be careful what I say because people take everything out of context. But I think the whole emphasis on looks, period, in sports is really, you know, is it's bad. I mean, and we're saying this to Holly with the beach volleyball players who somehow are all good looking. I don't know how that is, but they usually are really good looking. Let's just be honest about that. Okay. That's not a stereotype. That's just a fact. But with, especially with broadcasting, Holly, I do say that it's bad for me because maybe I'm making a generalization, but the better looking you are, you know, I think people say, oh, okay, that's how she got the job. But there are some really good looking people who are just really good at what they do. So you can't hold it against them. But I think that shouldn't be the reason in politics, sports, or anything, any company that you get hired. But, you know, I guess that is kind of the reality that we're dealing with.
Yeah, there's a focus, you know, in our culture on how people look, no matter what they do. So, you know, it's our culture, it's social media, you know, everybody's getting the attention when they look good. But for me, when I broke into broadcasting, I got an opportunity. I was a 3-time Olympic athlete. I'd won an NCAA championship. So I got the opportunity. And guess what? I was really bad. I didn't even know what I was doing. but I did the work. I did the work, and it still took me a long time. I didn't even feel that comfortable till my 5th year because there's not that many opportunities to work on TV for volleyball. So I didn't have that many opportunities to get better, but I worked with somebody. We critiqued me on video, and it was the most painful thing, but I wanted to get better. And I'm coachable, and I think that's one of the things that I learned from sports. Being coachable is so important in life. If you want to get better, if you want to do things at the highest level, you have to be coachable. You have to be willing to do what it takes to be the best.
Have you both gone back and looked at your first or second or third runs on television? Anne-Marie,
no,
have you
and
gone
I
back?
No, I don't want to. Absolutely. I would be painful. It is painful. We did the same thing with the podcast. I've told Holly, like, you have to listen to it. We have to get better each time. It doesn't change no matter how long you've been doing it. You got to listen back to your own work. Get better.
You do. And I always say, once I do it, I don't even want to see myself. I don't want to see myself on TV. I never. People say, do you ever Google yourself? I say, literally, I've never Googled myself. Not one time. Not one time. Yeah. God knows what you'd find. You guys are amazing. Incredible. Just an incredible inspiration, I think, for so many folks out there, especially women, but just everyone, women, men. people who set a goal, fulfill their goal, who've succeeded in, across so many businesses and in sports and in broadcasting. I hope you guys will come back. And I'm so excited of the success of your podcast, Sports Like a Boss, on Podcast One. It's really, really popular. And just thanks so much for being out there.
Thank you so much for having us.
All right, Anne-Marie Anderson, Holly McPeak, we're all going to go out. We all have to go out together and, like, really talk about these things. So then maybe we'll bring the cameras in, okay, because then that'll even be better. Let's go to Peggy in Florida. Peggy, what's on your mind about this sports mania with kids?
Well, hey, Laura, our case might not be the majority, but after completing her first year of middle school, my daughter decided that she would prefer to, you know, focus on academics rather than gymnastics. She had been into for 4 years competing, and she was really good at it. And we don't like to say she quit, but she just decided, you know, she wanted to focus more on school and keep up. She wanted to attain the top 5% of her class.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's definitely not a quitting situation for her. She always said, well, maybe I'll go back. But, you know, we support her decision, and we're happy that school is taking precedence for her.
Well, I think that is, first of all, I think that's incredibly refreshing. My friend's daughter, similar thing. She was a little younger. I think she stepped away from gymnastics a couple of years ago. She was phenomenal. I mean, she was really, really good. She was, you know, traveling and a member of this gymnastics traveling team. And she just like, I'm done. And she's playing a little lacrosse, a little this, a little that. And she's one of the top students in her class. So I think, you know, when kids quit sports, you know, it's unless they're quitting because they're addicts to drugs or some other horrible thing. So what? Maybe they just want. Maybe they're not interested. If they can do some physical activity, that's good. But if they don't want to play, you know, competitive sports, big deal. Not everybody's an athlete. I think that's completely fine. You just don't want them sitting around eating junk food. But you know, your daughter is a total star and wants to be an academic success. More power to her. That sounds like a really mature kid, if you ask me. You're listening to the Laura Ingraham Podcast. Thanks again to all of our sponsors who supported the show, Genucel, Delta Animal Rescue, and Sheiks. Remember, America now and forever, the Laura Ingraham Podcast.